In stem cell news, the United Nations has decided against a ban on cloning introduced by Costa Rica with support of the U.S. almost 2 years ago. The plan now is to pursue an Italian declaration, which calls upon member states to, quote, prohibit any attempts at the creation of human life through cloning processes and any research intended to achieve that aim. Italian delegates said the language of the declaration drafted this week is sufficiently vague to leave the specifics open to interpretation. Now on the phone with us to discuss stem cells in more detail is Dr. Henry Klassen. Klassen is the director of stem cell research at the Children's Hospital of Orange County. He is also a visiting associate researcher in the Department of Ophthalmology at UC Irvine and is an adjunct associate scientist at Shepin's Eye Research Institute in Boston. His current work is focused on retinal stem cell transplantation and the development of therapeutic strategies for treatment of retinal diseases. Henry, are you there?
Yes.
Hi. Can you explain for listeners who may not be aware what embryonic stem cells are, how they are acquired, and what they're used for?
Okay, so the field of stem cell transplantation encompasses a broad number of areas, including a number of different types of cells that could be called stem cells or not, depending on the peculiarities of the definitions used. Embryonic stem cells refers to a specific type of cell that comes from the early embryo at a stage known as a blastocyst, and this occurs a few cell divisions past the fertilized egg. So it's five, six, seven days post-fertilization. You have this basically a bubble of cells, round ball with a fluid-filled interior, and at one end of that bubble is a mass of cells known as the inner cell mass. And it's those cells that when they're taken out of that embryo and dissociated can be grown individually, and they form little colonies. And the cells in these colonies have the properties of embryonic stem cells. And what's special about them is that they can, each and every one of them, can give rise to each of the different cell types that make up an individual human or other animal. So they have this feature known as pluripotency, that they can give rise to each and every cell type found in the body.
So are you're talking about stem cell differentiation?
Well, you define the stem cell in terms of what it's capable of giving rise to. Actually, directing that differentiation turns out to be a more complicated task and is not yet fully understood. Embryonic stem cells are of particular interest because of their pluripotency, which means that you can make basically any type of cell from an embryonic stem cell. So if you have embryonic stem cells, in theory, you can make any other kind of cell that you want. Actually doing that is more challenging. The advantage to taking stem cells, so-called, from particular tissues, even though they're limited to the tissues in which they're found in terms of the cells that they will eventually give rise to, it's more likely that they will actually go that particular direction. So in other words, embryonic stem cell has more capacity in theory to do a lot of different things, but a tissue-specific or adult stem cell, although its range is limited, the likelihood of it doing what it's supposed to do is much higher. And so they're easier to control, basically because you don't have to control them as much.
That's interesting. Thanks. Could you give a couple examples of the potential benefits of stem cell research and maybe related to what you're working on in particular?
Okay, to start with an adult-type stem cell, one that's directed towards a particular tissue, I would talk about the hematopoietic stem cell that's associated with bone marrow transplantation. So the whole field of bone marrow transplantation was basically the field of hematopoietic stem cell transplantation before they knew how to isolate the stem cells within the bone marrow. Now that they can get the bone marrow stem cells out of the bone marrow, they don't have to transplant the whole bone marrow, just the stem cells. And that improves the outcome because it decreases the likelihood of rejection and it gives you more of what you want and less of what you don't want. I mean, this is in widespread clinical use and can be found in most major hospitals already. So this is what I would say is already a mature clinical use of a type of stem cell. Now, they're not nearly as powerful a stem cell as an embryonic stem cell because they only give rise to the cells of the blood, or at least that's what they're used for right now. So an embryonic stem cell should, in theory, be able to be applied to heart disease, diabetes, brain and retinal diseases, et cetera. But it's a little further from clinical application for the simple reason I described, that it's much harder to be certain that when you start with an embryonic stem cell, you're actually going to end up with what you want to end up with. My particular area of interest is the retina, and for that, we've started by going with more an adult-type stem cell from the retina. So even though these cells are quite mature, so the word adult is kind of a misnomer here, but that's what's popularly used. Mm-hmm. But these tissue-specific retinal cells give rise to retina. And what's great about that is it's really hard to get other types of cells to become retina. And so we've been able to demonstrate that cells of this type, when transplanted to the degenerating retina, can give rise to new retinal cells, including neurons, specifically cells that look a lot like ganglion cells at the output end of the retina and photoreceptors at the input side of the retina, and a whole host of other cell types in between. The functional consequences of this work haven't been fully worked out yet, and it's a very complicated type of thing to demonstrate, especially in rodents where most of the work is done. So we've been moving more into pigs with the idea of being able to demonstrate whether these cells have any functional capability or not once they've differentiated into retina. Now, another potential strategy would be to start with embryonic stem cells and then give rise to retinal cells of various types. And I think the potential is there, but the pathway to go from an embryonic stem cell all the way up to a mature retinal cell, that's not really understood. And even though that can happen spontaneously in a dish when you're growing embryonic stem cells, to do it in a reliable way that would have clinical significance is still a little ways off. But there may still be other ways of utilizing embryonic stem cells other than having to create mature retinal circuitry that would still benefit people with eye disease. For instance, these cells might be convinced to deliver genes of various types that could help preserve the existing circuits that are sick.
To shift over to the political side a little bit, I was wondering what your opinion was on the passing of California Proposition 71, the Stem Cell Research and Cures Initiative, allowing the state to provide $295 million a year for stem cell research over the next 10 years.
Well, it's gratifying that California voters have enough interest in stem cell research to vote with their pocketbook. I'm certainly gratified and feel much more optimistic. I think it's great for the state of California because the moment that passed, the entire nation felt this kind of tilt with all the balls kind of rolling into this pocket. So I think the desired effect will likely happen in that stem cell researchers will become much more abundant in this state, and the stem cell research community here will become very much enlivened by this. And that's likely to lead to more and faster results in this area.
Do you have any...
And I think it's a pretty bold move for the governor to support this, given the amount of political pressure to defeat it.
Definitely. Do you have any concerns about the public funding of, you know, corporate research in this regard, or competition over the monies?
Well, There are a number of companies in California that are devoted to work with stem cells, either embryonic or more adult type, and they will no doubt be looking for support by this mechanism as well.
Mm-hmm.
Because this is translationally aimed, I don't think that's a bad thing, as long as things get split up equitably. Because by their very nature, a company is trying to move things more towards a pragmatic application. And that's one of the criticisms of basic science research, is that at times it can be so focused on getting the next grant that it never seems to end up going in the direction of helping somebody.
Mm-hmm. Have you encountered funding problems yourself in this line of research?
Well, I would say funding in science tends to be a very up-down situation to begin with, and in stem cells, it's even more that way, so that stem cell funding was actually fairly popular about 4 years ago or before the market crashed, and then since then, things have been pretty scarce, I have
mm-hmm.
to say. So
mm-hmm.
this is a very much appreciated boost to the area, I would say.
As I'm sure you know, Senator Sam Brownback, of Republican from Kansas, and Representative Dave Weldon, Republican from Florida, drafted bills that would outlaw therapeutic cloning in the United States. But as I stated earlier, a similar proposal was just abandoned by the UN. Could you talk a little bit about therapeutic cloning in particular and why it's so controversial?
I think it's only controversial, in my opinion, because of the word cloning.
Mm-hmm.
And that word is poorly understood by some people, but it seems like, well, I have a very strong opinion about this. I think this is just the battle related to abortion basically being fought at the level of science. And it's not the scientists who are fighting it, but the attacks are coming politically. Instead of trying to roll back Roe versus Wade or what have you, or in vitro fertilization, they're going after the scientists as if they're some kind of criminal. But obviously the ethical decision as to whether you abort a fetus or whether you use or do not use a blastocyst that was created during in vitro fertilization, that's the decision of the parent. And when that is done, it's done. And from there on, you can either discard this tissue or not. And the whole thing has been cleared and is legal, and there's numerous regulations involved. And so to kind of finger the scientists as doing something kind of sketchy is kind of ridiculous on the face of it.
Mm-hmm.
I think what we really need here is to get back to the Constitution and look for a separation of church and state, because I think that's what's really behind this.
Uh-huh. Do you have any concerns about the? I mean, do you feel like you're in any way close to the human cloning concerns, or?
So therapeutic cloning, basically, what you're doing is, say, somebody has a disease. Say it's Ronald Reagan, and he's got Alzheimer's, and you want to put some stem cells into his brain to help with his problem.
Mm-hmm.
But you want those stem cells to appear as self to his immune system. In other words, you want the stem cells that you transplant to not look foreign and increase the odds of rejection. So the trick, that's the whole idea behind therapeutic cloning. You take the person's own chromosomes, or the nucleus of a cell, and you insert them into an embryonic stem cell. And when you do that, in theory, that stem cell becomes an embryonic stem cell of your own, even though you're not an embryo anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And so the only objection to this is like putting a ban on embryonic stem cells. You're taking an embryonic stem cell and you're giving it a new nucleus. It's like a customization.
Mm-hmm.
So that's all there is to it. So why is that morally objectionable? Well, it's just the same people who want to ban embryonic stem cells.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, why don't they ban in vitro fertilization instead? You know, then there wouldn't be any embryonic stem cells. That's the real question. It keeps, you know, getting shunted off onto the science. And
right.
Not the science that's the problem here.
there is some concern, you know, with the recent influx of Republicans into the Congress and Senate. There is some concern that the therapeutic cloning ban has more chance of actually passing this year, which would sort of put California in a precarious situation, having just passed this funding. Do you have any thoughts on that in particular, and sort of what, or any sort of, I don't know if people are talking about that or if there's a plan of action of what, if that happens?
I mean, I'm just not convinced that most of the people who are against therapeutic cloning have the slightest clue what it actually is.
Mm-hmm.
So, I think therapeutic cloning, to the extent it's actually possible, which, you know, remains to be seen just how viable this is, it will proceed worldwide. And the only question is, will it proceed here? That remains to be seen.
Yeah, and from the sound of it, and it sounds like other states are looking to follow in California's path.
Yeah, I would imagine this is a little bit of a wake-up call. But it's probably not over yet, because there'll be some kind of backlash one might anticipate. I mean, I don't know that for sure, but given the emotional content that seems to be behind this.
That is true. That is certainly true. Did you have anything else?
I'm just reminded of the monkey trials from the early part of last century. You know, you have these two viewpoints, but they're not really on the same footing at all. One's entirely religious-based and the other's scientific.
Well, and it could also similarly, you know, draw a pretty sharp division between the states in the country, which is already pretty heightened right
now. That
could
be. But, you know, there's not a lot of big universities in some of these states, or the ones that are there. You know, they may have a pretty good university, but they don't have as much of this kind of research going on.
Right.
I guess what I'm saying is some states have more to lose than others by banning this kind of thing. But,
right.
I mean, the tragic thing is I think everybody has a lot to lose if medical science doesn't move forward. But, again, like I say, it'll move forward somewhere, and maybe people just have to go overseas for their treatments. But we'll see.
Well, let's hope that that doesn't prove to be the case and that this funding leads to some really good work.
I mean, one heartening thing is to look at situations like what happened with in vitro fertilization. There was a lot of debating going on, but then they got really good at it. And then once it was happening, the demand for it kind of outstripped any further considerations. And now, you know, I don't think the same people who are trying to ban this cloning, therapeutic cloning, I don't think they'd be prepared to ban in vitro fertilization, which that's where the moral and ethical decision is really being made. But I think a lot of their constituents are now in favor of in vitro now that it's something that's available to them.
Mm-hmm.
And I think once these treatments are available for people with some of these conditions, and there's no other alternative, I think the support for this kind of work will just continue.
Right.
But it's really important to get to that point where effective treatments really are available. And so we're kind of at the threshold of that. So that's why it's so dicey, you know. Progress in this country could be set back quite a bit, and I'd say the last few years haven't been very helpful, actually. But here's an opportunity for things to move forward, and I sure hope that the scientists can come through with something good so that the people line up and support this and appreciate what's being done.
Well, thank you very much for speaking with us, Henry. It's been very informative.
You're welcome.
And have a good night.
Right. Thanks. You too.